It's the E-Commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you grow your e-commerce business faster and more efficiently by cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and guidance from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello, Master Plan world. Welcome to the latest E-Commerce Master Plan podcast. It's a pleasure, as always, to have you all out there listening. I'm Chloe Thomas, creator of the E-Commerce Master Plan, author, speaker and consultant. And as you all know, I focus on e-commerce business strategy and marketing. Last week, I took you through my recommendations for your summer reading. And this week, we're back to a good e-commerce interview. So let me introduce you to today's special guest. David Hatharamani is the co-founder of A Suit That Fits, a multi-award winning bespoke tailor that operates a hybrid bricks and clicks model. It all started with a proof of concept market stall in Hampstead back in 2006. And now they deliver about 10,000 orders every year. And last year raised just under £1 million in crowdfunding, over 90% of which was generated from the customers. Hi, David.
Hi, Chloe.
I've just given our listeners a very quick overview of you and your business and where you are now. So how did you get started in e-commerce?
Well, we started back in 2006 when one of my friends had been travelling all over the world. So he got suits tailored in China, in Africa, and eventually in Kathmandu in Nepal. He came back to the UK and I met him, and he was wearing this really awesome three-piece olive green suit. It had some massive flares as trousers. It had a kind of fabric that that was very daring. And I looked at it and thought, well, the fit is great and it's exactly what he wants. And wouldn't it be great if I could get something that I wanted too? So obviously minus the flares, I didn't want a three-button jacket. I wanted a two-button jacket. And my background was technology. And it just all clicked that we just thought, well, wouldn't it be cool if you can actually design a suit online? And back then we became the world's first online bespoke tailor. So fast forward 10 years, we realized very soon after starting that luxury bespoke tailoring required a personal service. So we started to open up our appointment book throughout the UK. We now have 30 places throughout the UK that you can actually visit to have your appointment. So you can go through the style, go through the measurements and go through the fit. And they're separated out into visiting locations that we visit between once every week and every 3 weeks, depending on how popular they are. And we call those tailor stops. And then we have our permanent studios, the rest of them, with our favorite and most busy one in the West End of London, where we have 4 style advisors working almost 7 days a week. Every week. So that's where we are and how we started.
Excellent. And the hybrid bricks and clicks that you're operating, can someone just walk in off the street into the store, or do they have to have booked that appointment in advance?
Well, firstly, they're not likely to walk in off the street. And the reason for that is that we don't take on shop front and retail premises in the kind of ordinary way. We more look at getting like space within the shopping regions, but not being retail. So they're very unlikely to walk into us unless they know we're there in those popular locations. So, for example, in London, in Glasshouse Street, off the back of Piccadilly, that's where our studio is. But it's actually a first floor. Where you really have to know it's there. I mean, you can see the mannequins and the kind of signage in the windows, but you really have to know it's there to know to book in. So that brings me back to booking in. So what our website actually does is effectively drive people to book in at their local studio. And that's what all of our equivalent of a sale online is, effectively, is securing that booking and making sure that we have a customer coming to see us.
So this was going to be one of my later questions. So I'm glad you've come on to this, which is, so the majority of your customers do see you face to face. They don't just come on and order blind, or is there a small percentage who will come onto the website, not come and get sized, but will go through that online process without seeing you?
Well, so just to answer that question directly. So about 95% of our customers will come to see us personally. But if I just rewind a little bit and take it back down to the roots. We started as the world's first online tailor. So we started with the idea that that you could do all of this online. And actually, it's very successful doing it all online. You'll find that, you know, measurements taken at home end up being very, very accurate because people know they're investing a lot of energy, time and money into the process. Yeah. So actually, the accuracy isn't the thing. But we wanted to make bespoke tailoring accessible for all. And we found that customers, on the whole, much preferred have the comfort of the personal advice, the personal appointment, all of the kind of conversations that go with that. So therefore, we started to open up our appointment book, and purely by choice of customers, about 95% of them come to see us. So we found that if you offer them a convenient way of going through their bespoke tailoring, they'll take it. And our mission is to make bespoke tailoring accessible to all in lots of ways. One of them being local to our customers. And in fact, we found that they much prefer to use that service.
That's such an important point there, I think, is that you've not set out to be the world's greatest online tailor. You set out to make tailoring accessible to more people. And the slight difference in that mission has enabled you to be able to kind of change the business model, almost flip it on its head completely. So it becomes face to face, not online only, because that's the way to achieve your more thought through, more sensible mission.
Well, I think it wasn't even a choice when the question kept asking. I mean, I think that if we had, you know, designed the most efficient business model to deliver bespoke tailoring, then we would have kept it as an online only offering and gone international, you know, and scaled in that way. But instead, what we'd always wanted and what was always more comfortable to us was actually really try and change the world and actually try and say, right, well, why aren't people getting bespoke tailoring? And why don't we address all of that by use of technology and by use of all the kind of 21st century methods that we now have? How do we make bespoke tailoring accessible for all? So when the question came, well, do we open up our appointment book? It wasn't even much of a consideration. The answer was, of course we do. So yeah.
Okay. So a little few details now about where the business is right now. I know you're in the UK and you're selling to the UK. Do you sell to any other countries?
We don't currently. We do. I mean, I mentioned the online only aspect of it. Mm. We have actually always had an element of customers who've always chosen to use us online. So where we don't service personally, in all of the, you know, countries in the world, we actually still have a really, you know, kind of dedicated fan base to us that has kind of used us for years throughout the world. So one of our top customers is in Germany. We have a lot of US customers. I kind of hesitantly say that we don't service with a luxury service, you know, Germany or the US or anywhere else for now. We still do have that online service that customers seem to really love in those countries too.
Well, of course, you're kind of accidentally international.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm guessing your platform is a bespoke one?
Yeah, I mean, everything we do is bespoke, including our platform. So yeah.
Yeah, you're not on Shopify then?
No.
Okay.
And Although last year we started up a charitable project in light of the Nepal earthquakes called Nepal Shirt, and the mission of that is to sell a white shirt that is hand tailored in Kathmandu in Nepal, with all of the proceeds and profits going to help rebuild you know, homes there. So that is one element that we actually have put on Shopify and not our own bespoke platform. So that we have, you know, tinkered with those other platforms as well.
Oh, cool. And what's your, how many are there in your team? Have you got, do you outsource a lot of things, or is it all about keeping control?
Well, in the UK, we have around about 35 people within our team. We have all of our technology and digital marketing is done internally. So actually, we have a UK-based CTO, Vitaly, and we have a UK-based digital marketing. We also have a technology team who are based actually in Russia, So it's still not outsourced. It's our own team just based in Russia. And we have kind of teams all over the world. So we have a team in India who deal with a lot of the technology required for actually making the garments. Making the cutouts of your suit before they're stitched together. And then we have our fantastic tailors based in Kathmandu in Nepal. So we have around about a team of 100 over there. So we have a very spread out team across the world.
And I'm guessing that 30 in the UK is head office. And then there's also your tailors around the country as well.
Yeah. So it's actually split between 20 in head office and 10 people around the country. Okay. who support our tailoring network.
And what do you think is the most awesome thing about your business right now?
I think our really unique mission is the most awesome thing. So we effectively are using technology to spread the mission of Bespoke for All. And I think that no one's really ever tried to properly scale Bespoke Tailoring. It's a very difficult thing to scale. So scaling personal relationships is a very difficult thing to scale. There are people that have done it in other industries. So there's Uber has done it with taxi drivers and Airbnb has done it with hosts. And we're looking to do the same thing with Bespoke Tailoring. So giving people who have a passion and interest in delighting customers and Bespoke Tailoring the platform to build their own Bespoke Tailoring business. And that's the most exciting thing that we're working on day in, day out, to actually spread the mission of Bespoke for All. So that's how excited we are internally about it.
So you said about helping them build their own Bespoke Tailoring business. So is it really about your style advisors? And do tell me if I'm getting the job title wrong. Is it about your style advisors having almost their own client list?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, the start of 2015, we realized that what we'd built is this fantastic platform that allowed people who are trained on it to create bespoke suits with customers and to delight their customers. And we realized that actually bespoke tailoring is personal. So it goes without saying, actually, that when you go and see someone, you'll recommend, that person for all of his or hers, kind of characteristics, for all of their personality, for the way they handled you as a customer. And what we've therefore realized is that this is something that we can now start to offer out to people who are interested in scaling a fashion and bespoke tailoring business, to actually leverage to grow their own business. And it's an opportunity that doesn't really exist in the fashion sector at all. So that coupled with all of the platform that we've built has really allowed us to start to look at this in a different way and start to really rapidly scale our mission throughout the UK. And that was what the fundraise last year was for, to make sure that we accelerated that mission. And that's what we're all of our team now is putting our efforts towards. So effectively becoming the platform that showcases fantastic bespoke tailors, not being the overall brand that sells, but supporting all of those individuals into growing their own business and selling effectively through them as people and their own effective brand hosted on our platform.
So it's white labeling, for want of a better word.
No, it's actually it's more like, so think of it as hosts to Airbnb or taxi drivers to Uber. So providing the platform that allows them to grow a business. And this business being in fashion and bespoke tailoring. So it's not white labeling. It's us having the stamp of approval and certification, and them all using our amazing platform that we've created over the last 10 years to scale their own business, but within the platform. So it will always be represented as ASTF. But with them being the personality and the drivers that can delight customers and drive their own local business through showcasing them as people.
Got you. So it's like the local seamstress or tailor and dress alterer is kind of becoming a partner, franchisee, etc. of a suit that fits.
Exactly. And not only that, but the grand mission is to actually bring back tailoring to the state that it was back in the 60s, where everyone had every household had a tailor that they really loved and used and passed throughout their family and throughout their friends network, and bringing that back to the UK that I think has been missing for such a long time.
And I guess the raising that money as part of a crowdfunder and discovering how much of that support was from your own customers, just for the listeners to remind them, it's £1 million that was raised, just under £1 million was raised, and over 90% of that was directly from the customers of A Suit That Fits. I guess that's quite a good way of sense checking that you're heading in the right direction, a direction that the customer is going to enjoy you going in because they're willing to put their own money behind it.
Yeah, I mean, that was very, kind of, it felt like a fantastic endorsement to the entire team for all of their efforts. But now what it feels like is that we have 477 real advocates throughout the UK who can push this mission, because this mission is going to take, changing the way people shop and changing the way people think about buying their suits. It's going to take all the help that it can get, really, because we're trying to effectively change people's habits that they've had for a lifetime. So having all of that support and riding that wave of enthusiasm has been really great for us as well.
So we had last year or earlier this year, one or the other, had a chap on the podcast called Dave Rotherow, who's used crowdfunders to launch his two businesses. And his point of view on it was the money's great, but the enthusiasm and the community feel that it creates is even more powerful than the money that enables you to build the business. Is that something you'd agree with?
I mean, I'll just give you an example. So one of our investors, I actually met at an event before he'd even considered investing. But he got in touch at the time of the crowdfund, and he put a little bit of money in. But he's now effectively like a fantastic sense check on our marketing. So now I have regular phone calls with him. And it's just added there's another guy who, was a relatively large investor, within the crowd Cube campaign. And he's effectively a technical specialist, like an IT specialist that has managed teams of hundreds of people. So he's always wanting to kind of test new things that come out on our website, and he's in contact. Constant contact with our CTO. So it's really added this wealth of interested people who are wanting to drive us, and that's fantastic. So it's that support has been a big thing.
So I've got one last question probably two last questions before we get into the top sit round. The first of which, we're talking a lot here about how it's all about the customer, and getting that relationship going with them. Now, your type of product could be seen as a big customer service challenge. And I'm increasingly of the opinion that customer service in and of itself, creating the right product, allowing someone to order it, getting it to them, is a mixture between systems, training of the team, and the marketing and content that you put out there. Which of those three would you say has been the most important to be giving a good service to your consumers?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. So what are the choices? So systems, marketing.
Marketing and the training of the team.
Training the team. You mentioned it being a good mix, but they're all equally important, really. I mean, the systems, I suppose, leads on to needing less training of the team. So the systems is fundamentally important, because if things are built into the system, then less training of the team is required, meaning the training you can give them is actually value added training, not just
click here, do this.
So you can actually tell them how they need to approach people, not what they need to do. Mm-hmm. So we've always tried to build everything into the systems as much as we can. There's obviously a limit to that, because bespoke tailoring pretty complicated, so you need to know the things that you need to enter into a system as well. But all of the other two things, I think, are linked very closely. So you've got training of the team and marketing. They have to support each other. So the marketing has to, all the marketing messages have to be supported by all of the training in the team. So I think I don't think you can, if you fall down on one of those things, then you lose the whole thing. So I think all of those things have to be spot on. So I'm sorry I haven't really helped you on that, but that's That's just my thoughts poured out.
No, I think those are great thoughts. And I know that a lot of the listeners will be going, oh, as they're listening to that, either, oh, we're doing okay, or, oh, that's what I should be doing. So I think the thought process is as important as a hierarchy. My last question, which kind of feeds into that, is around the blog. Because when you get to your website, your blog is right there on the homepage. Is that something you're testing at the moment? Is that something you've tested and shown to be giving people advice about tailoring is central? Or is it kind of just part of the mission that you're hoping the customer will respond to?
Okay, so I mean, our new website should be out quite soon. And actually, we've been thinking a lot about how to integrate content into kind of our website. But if we take a step back, what we've realized that we've become over the last 10 years is effectively the reason why people book in appointments with us is because they go through that fantastic experience, the style advice, our style advisors asking them all the right questions. And we're looking at very much creating the new website and completely refining it always and constantly refining it into being a representation of who we are as a business as a whole. So who we are as a business is that we'll advise you on what you need in your bespoke tailoring and garments that you want to create. And obviously, any content that we can provide, so the blog, the profiles of our fit experts, any pictures of garments that that our fit experts think are fun or exciting. All of that adds to the richness of the content of the whole website. And that's what our website is going to be built about. So really try to replicate, once you've clicked around on our website, we want you to actually have an understanding and a feel of what it's like to be in an appointment anyway. And that will come through content. That will come through content in all sorts, all kind of shapes and sizes, potentially more infographics and that kind of thing as well. Just to help you get to your perfect suit and your perfect style and your perfect fit expert as quickly as possible. So all of that content supports it. And it's not by chance that it's on our front page. It's always been very, very important to us to get the thoughts of our fit experts to our customers. So they know the kind of people that they'll be seeing when they book in with them. And that's something that will just grow over time.
David, would it be fair to say that part of that's to do with reducing a customer's fear of bespoke?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we try to make bespoke tailoring accessible in every way. Now, bespoke tailoring, unfortunately, sometimes that kind of brings in the fear of meeting someone who's not necessarily going to be, who's maybe going to be judging them, or it's a little bit of a stuffy environment and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we're completely anti that. We have always wanted to make bespoke tailoring feel like normal. So we want to connect you with someone that you feel you can get on well with to go through your, whole experience. And just kind of breaking the ice and actually having their voice out on there on our website has been a big thing to kind of make it feel like we're not actually that kind of stuffy tailor that's going to judge you by coming in. And we're actually, it's bespoke tailoring. It's fantastic. You'll get an awesome suit and you'll get an awesome shirt, overcoat, whatever you want to order. But you'll also feel good doing it. And that's what we've always tried to do. And that's just one of the barriers of accessibility that we tried to break down.
Excellent. Well, I think on that note, it's definitely time to move into the top tips round. And I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really good ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, David, the first one is your book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Oh, wow. Right. So there's so many, actually. So
you can have two if you can't pick just the one.
So I think a lot of people talk about a kind of, where they want to be and that kind of thing. But what a lot of people don't talk about is actually how you get things done. So I found one book that I kind of really, really like, because it kind of gives you practical advice on how to actually get things done, is called The Four Disciplines of Execution. So 4DX for short. So that's a really, really good book about it breaks down how, you know, you've got a big challenge that you want to overcome. How do you do the right things that will lead to getting that big challenge achieved, basically? So that's a really interesting book. And then I've got lots more, but I'll keep that one as my top tip, actually.
Okay, that's cool. That's a good one. And I know we haven't had that one on the podcast before, so that one's a first for all of us. The traffic top tips next, then. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think by the time that you've found one that is above all others, then other people, of course, onto it, really. I think the tip there isn't to look for this winning channel. I think the tip there is to, you know, constantly be experimenting and trying out new channels. And actually, when you're experimenting and trying out new channels, that's when they're the best value, because that's when people haven't caught onto them yet. So certainly we were the first people that even did paid click in bespoke tailoring, if you can imagine that, back in, you know, about 10 years ago. It was incredibly cheap back then, and we, you know, got all of our scale practically because we were the first people to that form of digital marketing. Now there are people that, you know, obviously are very, very good at that within our industry, but have moved on to Facebook advertising and are effectively using that. And that effectively, you know, takes, you know, the clicks away from paid click, because, you know, if people already know of a brand through Facebook marketing before they've even thought about searching it, they won't search for bespoke tailoring anymore. They'll search for the brand that they now know. So effectively, you've got to be constantly thinking of how you can innovate in all of the channels that consumers are seeing, and do it before your competitors do. So I think the best channel and the newest channel, the best channel and the cheapest channel is often the newest channel. So I would look at seeing how you can leverage those new popular channels.
You're speaking to the converted, because as everybody listening knows, I always end the podcast by telling everyone to just keep optimizing. So I think we're of a mind there, David. I think we're on the same page. So the next top tip is the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient day to day?
A lot of the time, and this is like once again completely obvious, but a lot of the time people have forgotten now that actually kind of you can't solve everything over email, you can't solve everything over chat or in collaborations on a new platform. A lot of the time you need to just have a really, you know, good topic and sort it out in a meeting, and it's really funny seeing that everyone's kind of forgotten this. In my office, a lot of the time, everyone's being really quiet, emailing about the same thing to each other. And you can see the emails going past, and people have actually forgotten that. Why don't we grab people, get them in a room, or have a conference call and just sort this out? Because it's often a lot more efficient. So I'd say, once again, don't get caught up on all of the, you know, the new tools, which they're all there, and I'm happy to use them all of the, you know, the kind of issue tracking and all of the different things that you can use. But really, if you want to sort out, you know, big fundamental things that require more than two people, you know, or even just two people in, then often a conversation is kind of that people have forgotten that lost art effectively. And I think that, you know, a good, you know, organized meeting can get through a lot more stuff than any of these collaboration tools that you can put together.
So true. So the startup top tip, if you met someone this weekend who's thinking of starting an e-commerce business, what would be your first tip for them?
So the first tip is, you know, effectively, if you're, you know, stop dithering and just, you know, do it, because you're not going to figure out if it's successful until you start doing it. A lot of the time people, you know, think, convince themselves out of or into things over a long period of time. And actually, you know, the time in e-commerce that you've been thinking about, if you've been thinking about something for 6 months, is probably too late. So I'd say just do it. The second thing is, once you've got traction on what you're doing, the same point, remember that in 6 months' time, a year's time, or 2 years' time, that's going to be old news. So you've got to be constantly thinking. So that innovation that got you to that point, so when we started, we were the world's first online tailor. Now we're effectively a host for other, you know, people to scale their own bespoke tailoring business. So that innovation you have to keep going within the business. And if you don't, you'll be today's, today's, news, but, tomorrow's, fish and chips wrappers or whatever they call, however that saying goes. I'm not sure if anyone eats fish and chips anymore, but there we go.
Okay, so Masterplan World, you can find those top tips and links to everything else we've been chatting about in today's episode by going to ecommercemasterplan.com/58. And I've got one last top tips question for you, David, which is, if your business didn't exist, which e-commerce business would you like to be in charge of?
Okay, if my business didn't exist, I suppose I mean, it's just obvious, isn't it? I really kind of, actually, is it obvious? I'm just thinking. I was going to say the obvious one, which is Amazon. And the reason I like Amazon is that they have they're very good at leveraging kind of other things that they've built as side businesses, like the kind of crowd computing and all of that. I think that they've done things in a way, to a scale that has been really, really impressive. And I really also like their way of working. So if you listen to or if you read about the kind of Amazon's, I think it's 13 or 14, pillars that you have to stick by if you want to be an Amazon employee, they basically tell you. So that's another kind of reading tip, is to read those, because they basically tell you, it's like an instruction set on the kind of employee you need to scale a business, basically. So Amazon would be a really good one. But the one thing I don't like about Amazon is that they are about driving things cheap and not really building any value in anything, and just getting things as cheap as they can and having this cheap message that gets sent out. And I actually think that there is a kind of a need for a more thought through, brand driven version of Amazon that isn't quite Net-a-Porter. So I think that there is space there for something that is a mix between those that can be really, really cool. But I haven't. So I'm not sure I'd work for Amazon for that reason. But they have a kind of a lot of principles that I really do like.
Cool. I'll let you have that one as a kind of a half and half answer, I think.
Yeah, I'm kind of. I'm going to be thinking about this now after that. Thanks for having me anyway.
Well, if you come up with another answer, let me know what it is in the meantime, and I'll add it into the show notes for everybody. David, before we say goodbye, would you like to let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Yeah, so you can find us at www.asuitthatfits.com. On Facebook, just search for A Suit That Fits. I think it's facebook.com/asuitthatfits. And Twitter is @asuitthatfits, and Instagram is @asuitthatfits. So we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'll add links to all of that and everything else we talked about today in the show notes. Masterplan World, you can find those at ecommercemasterplan.com/58, or just go to the website, click on the podcast tab, or use the search box. David, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast today and for being so generous sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com.